Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum. This is your Health is Your Wealth with your host, Rashad Sunni Al-Amin. As you all know, I'm a holistic practitioner, holistic educator, health educator, and I want to thank you all for tuning in today, Thursday. Every Thursday, we have this program from 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock. So thank you for tuning in. I want to thank Imam Alfred Muhammad for allowing me this spot every Thursday. And his program is Religion Means Alive. And I always have to mention for him to the audience that he always welcomes any donations to keep his program alive, to keep it going. And as you know, he also has a GoFundMe program, too, for prostate. So before I start, I want to just give you the address which you can send your donations to Imam Alfred Muhammad to keep this program alive. So you would send it to Alfred Muhammad, M-U-H-A-M-M-A-D, 817 Jackson Avenue, Linden, L-I-N-D-E-N, New Jersey, 07036. And also he has the GoFundMe Alfred Muhammad Prostate, as dealing with his prostate. Anybody wants to donate to him for that funding, just go online to GoFundMe Alfred Muhammad Prostate, and you can send any donations you wish to that site there. So, again, I thank you all for tuning in. We missed last week. We were supposed to have a special program, but things got a little confused, and we never did get on air. So I want to thank you for being on this week, you listeners. I always suggest that you have pen and paper ready to take notes because we always try to give out good information. Now, today, we're going to do something a little different. Okay, you know, most of the time I deal with certain diseases and sicknesses and try to give you solutions and whatever information on herbs and natural remedies for these problems. But I thought about something, and it was because of something I heard on the radio, and it kind of took me back to a book I read some years ago. And that book is called Confessions of a Medical Heretic by Dr. Robert S. Mendelsohn, a medical doctor. And this was a best-selling book. And I'm just going to read the back cover for you because we have to be aware of what goes on in these hospitals. You know, the biggest cause of death is what they call iatrogenic disease. That's death in the hospitals, okay, in case you don't know it. But let me read the back cover to you so that you get an idea of what we're going to be talking about this evening. It says on the back cover, approximately 2.4 million operations performed every year are unnecessary and cost about 12,000 lives. In six New York hospitals, 43% of performed hysterectomies reviewed were found to be unjustified. Did you hear that? You know what hysterectomies is, right? Sisters, you should know. You see? And then it says, historically, when doctors have gone on strike, the mortality rate has dropped. Think about that. Then it says, these are just a few of the shocking facts presented by Dr. Robert Mendelsohn in Confessions of a Medical Heretic. It says this new release, but believe it or not, this was released in 1976. Okay, it's going back that far, and things have not changed. But let me just finish reading the back. This new release of the critically acclaimed bestseller gives readers the information needed to help make their own medical decisions. Dr. Mendelsohn, world-famous physician and patient advocate, was a pioneer in the movement toward truth in the medical profession. Here he explains why modern medicine's methods are often more dangerous than the diseases they are designed to diagnose and treat. This provocative book covers issues from unnecessary surgery and prescribed drugs to preventive medicine and home birth, at a time when Americans are more concerned than ever with total health and how to achieve it, this is a book you can't afford to ignore. And then a little background here on Dr. Robert Mendelsohn. It says, Dr. Robert Mendelsohn, known to millions through his nationally syndicated column as the People's Doctor, was the National Medical Director of Project Head Start and chairman of the Medical Licensure Committee for the state of Illinois. Among the many faculty and hospital posts he held, he was an associate professor at the University of Illinois Medical School, director of Chicago's Michael Reese Hospital. Okay? So this man held some very prestigious positions in the medical field. So I want to share some of what he has written in this book because you need to know the truth about what goes on in these hospitals even to this day when you are relying on conventional medicine to treat disease, which in fact you can treat naturally if you would just research for yourself and start to get back into a natural lifestyle, and you'll see how your body starts to heal. Because, as I always said, every time you come down with a little symptom, the first thing most of you do is run to the doctor. And you know as soon as you walk through that door, he's going to take advantage of you. Do you understand? He sees dollar bills when you can just have a little patience and allow the body to heal itself. Because the body is very intelligent, brothers and sisters. It knows how to heal itself if you give it time. Do you understand? But most of you are hasty and want to rush because you think if you don't rush to this doctor, you don't die. Do you understand? Emergency, that's different. Emergency medicine is totally different from conventional disease-treating medicine. Do you understand? So keep that in mind as we go through this book, Confessions of a Medical Heretic. Now, I want to read from some of the chapters in here. If you don't, I hope you all don't mind. Okay, because you really need to know what's going on. This thing has not changed since the time he has written this book. Matter of fact, be very honest with you. I had a family member. It went over to the hospital and for some symptom they had. And the nurse took her to the side and said, let me tell you something. They don't perform a whole lot of unnecessary tests on you. Don't take them. Don't take them. They're unnecessary. They're making money. And she took heed. Do you understand? She went and told her the truth. He just exposed these people. Okay? Some people are truthful. There's a few of them. Doctors and nurses who are still truthful, mainly nurses. But anyway, I'm going to go to this chapter. And matter of fact, it's the first chapter of the book. I'm going to quote some of what he has written in here. The first chapter is called Dangerous Diagnosis. Now, I'm pretty sure, and I don't know if this gentleman, Dr. Mendelsohn, is still alive or not, because, like I said, he wrote this book back in 76. He's an elderly person. And I'm sure he had no problem for me or anyone else to quote from his books and share this information, because information is supposed to be shared. Okay? Now, let me tell you from the first chapter what he says right here. Listen closely, brothers and sisters. He says, and I quote, "I don't advise anyone who has no symptoms to go to the doctor for a physical examination. For people with symptoms, it's not such a good idea either. Entire diagnostic procedure from the moment you enter the office to the moment you leave clutching a prescription or a referral appointment is seldom useful ritual. The mere act of delivering yourself to the priestly doctor and submitting to his wishes presumably bestows the benefit. The feeling is that the more exams you have and the more thorough the exams, the better off you'll be. All of which is nonsense. You should approach the diagnostic procedure with suspicion rather than confidence." Did you hear that? He said to approach it with suspicion rather than confidence. Then he said, "You should be aware of the dangers and that even the simplest, seemingly innocuous elements can be a threat to your health or well-being." God Almighty. Did you hear that, brothers and sisters? Now, that alone should make you be weary about walking into a hospital. Do you understand? Why in the heck do half of you out there go to a hospital for a cold? Why? Man, we used to treat that stuff at home. Parents would treat you at home. The body is releasing all this mucus when you have a cold. It's trying to get rid of all this mucus. It's trying to clean itself. And you should allow it to do what it's got to do. But as soon, brothers and sisters, as you start putting these suppressants, these medicines into your body to suppress it so you can feel better, it doesn't go away. It just stays stagnant for a while. Next year it comes back again, and you keep doing the same thing. And guess what? The more you do it, the more it leads to cancer. That's a fact. Anyway, so now, going back to this doctor, quoting from his book again, he says, "There's no question that there's a high degree of contagion from the use of stethoscopes from patient to patient." Did you hear that? Huh? Contagion. That means that same stethoscope that he just used on somebody's chest, he's now using on your chest. It's not clean. Who knows what bacteria, what virus, what anything was on that person's chest, and the stethoscope picked it up, this is me talking now, and has transferred it to your chest. You see? So then he says, now when I say quote, then now I'm quoting him. Then he says, quote, "And there's almost no form of serious disease that cannot be suspected or diagnosed without the stethoscope." He says, "In congenital heart disease, where the baby is blue, it's obvious because the baby is blue. In other forms of heart disease, the diagnosis can be made by feeling the various pulses around the body." Okay? "In coarctation of the aorta, for example, there's a deficiency of the pulse rate in the femoral arteries in the groin. You don't need a stethoscope to make the diagnosis. Okay? And I'm going to cut this part in the stethoscope short. I'm going to quote this other part here where he says, the only value of the stethoscope over the naked ear applied to the chest is in the convenience and modesty of the physician. There's nothing that he can hear with the stethoscope that the physician cannot hear with his ear against the person's chest. As a matter of fact, I know some doctors who now put their stethoscope around their neck and don't put the ear pieces in their ears as they apply the bell to the patient's chest. At one time, I used to think that was really terrible. Not anymore. The doctor probably realizes consciously or otherwise that the patient needs the stethoscope examination because it's part of the sacred ritual rather than because it makes any sense or does any good. You understand? Confessions of a medical heretic. Now, I want to go through some other parts of this book. As a matter of fact, let me quote something else here from the book that he mentions here. Let me see if I can get to the beginning of this here quote. Okay, I'm going to skip that part. And let's go. Okay, over here. Okay. Now, a quote from him in the book, he says, today, educators, physicians, and parents have consciously or otherwise joined in a conspiracy to medicalize almost all behavior problems. What happens is that a child gets sent home with a note asking for a conference. At the conference, the parents are told the child might have an organic brain problem, might be hyperactive, might be minimally brain damaged. Parents and child are hustled off to the doctor for an EEG. Then on the basis of the EEG, which may or may not be accurate, the child is drugged into fitting the behavior mode that best suits the teacher. Huh? By far, the most pervasive and dangerous diagnostic tool in the doctor's office is the X-ray machine. Did you hear that, brothers and sisters? The X-ray machine. How many times have I told you about the X-ray machine in my talks on this program? Okay, let's go back. Quote, unfortunately, because of its great religious significance, talking about the X-ray machine, the X-ray machine will be the hardest for doctors to give up. They know that people are awed by the doctor's power to see right through their flesh, to gaze firsthand at what is afflicting them, to see where they cannot. Doctors literally got drunk on this power and started using X-rays on everything from acne to settling the mysteries of the developing fetus. Many obstetricians still insist on X-rays if they don't quite trust their skill in determining fetal position by palpation, despite the fact that childhood leukemia has a well-documented link with prenatal radiation exposure. Did you hear that? Brothers and sisters, did you hear that? Childhood leukemia has a well-documented link with prenatal radiation exposure. My God. Wake up. And you know, a lot of you want to go to the doctor when you're pregnant to see if you're going to have a boy and a girl. Don't you know what those tests are doing to that poor child? That child is supposed to be in darkness at all times. No light should be interfering with that fetus in your stomach there. Do you understand? But I want to know if it's a boy or a girl. So when I have my, the party with everybody, just slipped my mind. Anyway, so they know what clothes to buy or whatever, what colors to buy, you understand, you know. So anyway, this is ridiculous. You should just keep it a mystery of whether it's going to be a boy or girl, okay? You don't need to have these tests done. You're causing damage. You are causing damage, okay? So think about that, brothers and sisters. Now, here's another quote. He said, thyroid lesions, many of them cancerous, are now turning up by the thousands in people who are exposed to head, neck, and upper chest radiations 20 to 30 years ago. Did you hear that? And he said thyroid cancer can develop after an amount of radiation that is less than that produced by 10 bite wing dental x-rays. Now, I want to stop there for a moment. I just heard a report on the radio. It was a health program. And the doctor was saying, if you have dental x-rays, listen up, it can lead to brain tumors. Now, can you see the connection with what this man is saying? You see? When you go to the dentist, don't accept dental x-ray. They have new technology now to see that that's not going to cause the damage that x-rays do. So keep that in mind. Now, let's continue from where I just left off about the x-rays. Scientists testifying before Congress have emphasized the hazards of low-level radiation to both the present generation and to future generations in the form of genetic damage. They have implicated x-rays in the development of diabetes, cardiovascular disease, stroke, high blood pressure, and cataracts, all associated with aging. You see? Other studies have matched radiation to cancer, blood disorders, and tumors of the central nervous system. Conservative estimates peg the number of deaths each year directly attributable to medical and dental radiation at 4,000. This is back in 76. Now think about that. Huh? Watch, listen, it is a scientific fact that just one x-ray can cause cancer in your body. Just one. Now, that's why I always say to you all to have the right lifestyle, to eat the proper foods that can ward off the side effects from these type of tests. Do you understand? But a lot of us are just ignorant of the fact we don't know, you know, what to do, or we're not even aware of the effects of what these tests can do to our bodies. We think that the doctor knows everything. We trust them because he's the doctor. He knows. He thinks he knows. He guesses at a lot. He misdiagnoses quite a bit. He treats, and I'm talking about with treatment with the drugs, quite a bit. Medical mistakes, which are causing a lot of deaths right there in your hospital, even in your home, if they give you the wrong drug. So think about this. You know, there's so many better ways to treat disease than drugs. So many better ways, brothers and sisters. So keep that in mind. Before we continue, again, because Imam Alfred Muhammad always asked me to remind you, first of all, this is Your Health is Your Wealth with Rashad Suni El-Amin, holistic educator and practitioner. And I want to mention again, anybody who wants to keep this program alive and Religion Means Alive with Imam Alfred Muhammad, which is on 6 days a week, that you can send all donations to Alfred Muhammad, 817 Jackson Avenue, Linden, New Jersey, 07036. Linden is L-I-N-D-E-N. And he also has the GoFundMe Alfred Muhammad Prostate. You can go online there. Just type in GoFundMe Alfred Muhammad Prostate, where you can send donations to that program also. Again, thank you. Now, back to the book. Now, let me go here now. Let me quote from the book again, dealing with x-rays. He says, yet x-rays are still sacred in most doctors' and dentists' offices. Hundreds of thousands of women are still lining up every year for breast x-rays, despite the well-published scientific evidence that the mammography, listen up, sisters, that the mammography itself will cause more breast cancer than it will detect. The ritual of the annual x-ray, the pre-employment x-ray, the school entrance x-ray, and the health fair x-ray continue. I hear about and get letters from people whose doctors pronounce them in perfect health, but still insist on a chest x-ray. One man told me about going to the hospital for a hernia operation, where he was given 6 chest x-rays from the radiologist. Conversations, he got the distinct impression they were experimenting with the exposure levels. The same man was given 30 x-rays at a local dental school where he went to get a crown replaced. Unquote. Did you hear that? 30. I'm telling you, don't let these doctors fool you. Oh, these are low-level radiation. These are low-level radiation levels. Listen, low-level is even worse. There's a book on that. I can't think of the name of the book. I have it somewhere here. But anyway, it tells you about low-level radiation. This stuff is dangerous. This is a medical doctor confessing of what they're doing to you in the hospitals. Brothers and sisters, now, I know some of you, maybe tomorrow, you're going to see a doctor for some problem you have, and you may be in line for an x-ray. You see? You know they get paid big bucks for all the tests that they do on you? For every procedure, they get big money off your insurance. So they'll do as many tests as they can to line their pockets up. They line their pockets up, believe me. And then they come with the treatment. And it's costly. One pill, $100 a pill. Chemotherapy, $15,000, $20,000 per therapy. They're getting paid. And half the stuff, and most of it doesn't even work. And they're getting paid. And you're the one suffering. Find alternatives, brothers and sisters. First, look at alternatives before you go conventional. Make conventional your last resort if nothing else works. As I said, the body is intelligent. It knows how to heal itself. Just give it what it needs to help it along and stop abusing your bodies with all these drugs, medical drugs, recreational drugs, beer, alcohol, cigarettes, and all these crazy get-high drugs they have out here that making people go crazy and get themselves locked up. Stay away from that mess. Doesn't belong in your body, first of all. Oh, I got to have my beer. Why? What's wrong with a glass of lemonade? Tastes better. And it's more refreshing. Oh, you need the buzz, huh? You know, you keep buzzing around. And the buzzers will be picking on you after a while. Anyway, so much for that. Now, let's move on. Now, another quote. He says, lab tests are another part of the diagnostic procedure that do more harm than good. Medical testing laboratories are scandalously inaccurate. Did you hear that? In 1975, the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, reported that its surveys of labs across the country demonstrated that 10 to 40% of their work and bacteriologic testing was unsatisfactory. 30 to 50% failed various simple clinical chemistry tests. 12 to 18% flubbed blood grouping and typing, and 20 to 30% botched hemoglobin and serum electrolyte tests. Overall, erroneous results were obtained in more than a quarter of all the tests. In another nationwide survey, 50% of the high standard lab licensed for Medicare work failed to pass. A large scale retesting of 25,000 analyses made by 225 New Jersey labs, this is where I live, New Jersey, revealed that only 20% of them produced acceptable results more than 99% of the time. Only half passed the test 75% of the time. Did you get that, brothers and sisters? Then he said, to get some idea of what people are really getting for their $12 billion worth of lab tests each year, 31% of a group of labs tested by the CDC could not identify sickle cell anemia. Another test group incorrectly identified infectious mononucleosis at least one-third of the time. From 10 to 20% of the tested groups incorrectly identified specimens as indicating leukemia, and from 5 to 12% could be counted on to find something wrong with specimens which were healthy. And he said, my favorite study is one in which 197 out of 200 people were cured of their abnormalities simply by repeating their lab test. My God. Then he says, if you think these tests are shocking, keep in mind that the Center for Disease Control monitors and regulates fewer than 10% of the country's labs. So these tests indicate the best work of the best labs. With the rest, you pay your money and you take your chances. And you will pay more and more because doctors practicing just-in-case medicine are ordering more and more laboratory tests. Do you get it, brothers and sisters? Unnecessary. Botched test. This is what, listen, a lot of you are being misdiagnosed. You think you've got something that you really don't have. And you're being treated for it, and it's making you worse and making you just sick as heck. And you're wondering, what happened? Well, you were feeling all right when you went in there. You see, you're taking a chance every time you walk through those hospital doors. You understand? Have to get back to nature. Got to get back to the natural lifestyle. Got to get back to eating from nature, where the body recognizes real food. And as Hippocrates said, food is your medicine, and medicine is your food. That makes more sense to me than drug is your medicine, and your medicine is drug. Oh, my God. Brothers and sisters, we got to wake up. We have got to wake up. They have pulled the wool over our eyes. And like Malcolm said, we have been bamboozled. This is medical mafia. You understand? I know some of you saying, oh, no, I got a good doctor. He's very good. He gives me this medicine, and I got this other. I got about 20 medicines I take, and I feel better. And at the same time, it's all leading to a disaster, believe it or not. All right. Let's try another chapter. I'm going to skip some of this. This chapter is called Miraculous Mayhem. Huh? Yes. Let me quote again. He says in this chapter, I can still remember how early in my medical career, I gave intravenous penicillin every few hours to children who were suffering the agonizing symptoms of bacterial meningitis and then watched miraculous changes occur hour by hour. Children who had been on the verge of death recovered consciousness and began to respond to stimuli within a few hours. A few days later, those same children were back on their feet, almost ready to go home. Okay? Now, patients with lobar pneumonia also would endure terrible agonies. They would enter a crisis of high fever, severe cough, gasping for breath, shaking chills, and extreme chest pains. Some recovered, but many died. When penicillin came along, people with lobar pneumonia no longer went through a crisis period. Instead, the fever, cough, and other symptoms resolved within days. People who would never have left the hospital alive packed their bags and walked out. I and other doctors truly felt that we were witnessing and working miracles. This is him speaking now. I'm quoting from the book. Things are different today. Meningitis and lobar pneumonia are uncommon. Even when a doctor does come up against such a life-threatening condition, the treatment is so routine that it is mainly carried out by a nurse or a medical technician. While the fascination with the miracle remains, these drugs that were once extremely valuable are now extremely dangerous. Huh? He says, many doctors prescribe penicillin for conditions as harmless as the common cold. Did I mention how Some of you run to the doctor, to the medical office or wherever to treat a common cold, and they want to give you penicillin. Okay, let's finish with what he said now. I quote again, since penicillin works almost exclusively against bacterial infections, it's useless against viral conditions such as colds and flu. Did you hear that? Penicillin and other antibiotics do not shorten the course of the disease, do not prevent complications, and do not reduce the number of pathogenic organisms in the nose and throat. They do no good at all. Did you hear that? No good at all. He said, and I quote, what they can do is cause reactions ranging from skin rash, vomiting and diarrhea to fever and anaphylactic shock. If you're lucky, you'll only be one of the 7 to 8% of people who suffer a rash, although a much higher percentage of people suffering from mononucleosis have gotten a rash when given ampicillin. For the unlucky 5% who get serious reactions to penicillin, the picture of a patient in anaphylactic shock is not pretty. Cardiovascular collapse, with clammy skin, sweating, unconsciousness, falling blood pressure, disturbance in heart rate and rhythm. It eerily evokes images of the very diseases which penicillin was designed to cure. How many of you are going to run now for that penicillin? Huh? To your doctor for that penicillin shot. You think about this now. To your research before you see a doctor. Always get second opinions. Go to a holistic doctor and get his opinion. See what he has to offer, brothers and sisters. Do you understand? Yes. Again, this is Your Health is Your Wealth with Rashad Suniel Amin. Hopefully you're taking notes. Hopefully you're paying attention, and hopefully you take heed. Let's go on. Then he says, and I quote, by no means is penicillin the only villain. Chloromycetin is a drug which is effective in certain types of meningitis caused by the H. influenza bacteria, as well as in diseases caused by typhoid and similar germs. In such situations, chloromycetin is often the only antibiotic that will work. But chloromycetin also has the not uncommon fatal side effect of interfering with the bone marrow's production of blood. Then he says, when a person's life is at stake anyway, this is an acceptable risk to take. But if a child suffers nothing more than a viral sore throat, is the non-relief chloromycetin will bring worth risking depression of the child's bone marrow, which will require multiple transfusions and other therapies, none of which will guarantee complete recovery? Of course it's not. Yet doctors do prescribe chloromycetin for sore throats. Huh? What happened with lemon juice? Huh? Remember lemons? Or did you forget that lemons are good for the throat? Huh? Natural remedies. And there's essential oils that also help with that. But we don't think about those things. We believe in Dr. Death. Now, I'm not being extreme, brothers and sisters. I'm just giving you some facts here. Okay? Nothing I made up. This is a doctor who's confessing, okay, of what goes on in hospitals. And it's getting worse. Okay? It's getting worse. Now, let's see. Let's try another page here. Okay. Let's start here. I quote, "Of course, modern medicine has a stronger drug ready for the stronger gonorrhea bacteria. Spectronomycin costs 6 times as much and has even more side effects. Meanwhile, the gonorrhea bacteria has developed a strain which is resistant to spectronomycin, too. As the battle escalates, the germs grow stronger, while the patients and the pocketbooks grow weaker." Huh? "All of which would not happen if doctors recognized that antibiotics have a place in the practice of medicine, a severely limited place. And if they enforce that restriction, a person may need penicillin or some other antibiotic 3 or 4 times during his or her entire life, at times when the stakes are worth the risk. Unfortunately, doctors have seeded the entire population with those powerful drugs. Every year, from 8 to 10 million Americans go to the doctor when they have a cold. About 95% of them come away with a prescription, half of which are for antibiotics. Not only are these people duped into paying for something which has no effectiveness against their problem, but they're set up for the hazards of side effects and the risk of deadlier infections." Did you hear that? Yes! My God, you ask your doctor to be truthful and share that information with you. He was not going to tell you something like this. He'll lose his patient. Then he says, "The doctor, once the agent of cure, has become the agent of disease by going too far and diffusing the power of the extreme on the mean. Modern medicine has weakened and corrupted even the management of extreme cases. The miracle I and other doctors were once proud of to take part in has become a miracle of mayhem." Did you hear that? Mayhem. Now, let's go here. I want to turn to another page. There's a lot here, and there's no way I can cover all this, but maybe, God willing, next week I can share a little more from this book. Okay, but let's go here. Quote, "Another even more powerful group of drugs whose use for the treatment of extreme conditions has shifted to common conditions is the steroid drugs. Steroids mimic the action of the adrenal glands, the most powerful regulators of body metabolism. Practically every organ is directly or indirectly affected by the secretions of the adrenal glands, as well by the synthetic chemicals prescribed by the doctor. Once upon a time, steroid drugs were prescribed for severe adrenal insufficiency, for disturbances of the pituitary gland, and for certain life-threatening conditions such as lupus, ulcerative colitis, leprosy, leukemia, Hodgkin's disease, and lymphoma. Today, steroids are prescribed for conditions as common as sunburn, mononucleosis, acne, and a large variety of skin rashes, which are often incorrectly diagnosed. Hear that? They're prescribing this stuff for everything. Some of you have taken steroids, and you know the side effects. Stuff is dangerous. All right, let me quote again. The entire list of precautions and adverse reactions to prednisone, another drug, prednisone, fills two columns of small print in the physician's desk reference, the Encyclopedia or Bible of Licensed Drugs in the United States. Among the adverse reactions are hypertension, loss of muscle tone, ulcer with possible perforation and hemorrhage, impaired wound healing, increased sweating, convulsions, vertigo, menstrual irregularities, suppression of growth in children, manifestation of latent diabetes, psychic disturbances, and glaucoma. Is getting rid of some minor skin rash worth risking one of these diseases? Apparently, some doctors think it is. Now listen, this is 1976 when he wrote this, 75 or 76. Now, a lot of you can get a physician's desk reference. Just go to Barnes & Noble, one of those bookstores, even a whole physician's desk reference. They can tell you all this stuff, okay? But what he just said here reminds me of the commercials we watch on TV that are promoting drugs. And they promote the drug for a certain sickness, and then they give you all the side effects. Now, here he is. 1975, 76, saying the same thing. He's saying it's getting rid of some minor skin rash worth risking one of these disasters, all those side effects I just mentioned here. Now, let me quote again. For example, a woman from Atlanta wrote me about her 20-year-old daughter who had never had a menstrual period. At the age of 11, the girl had developed a rash on her feet. The dermatologist prescribed prednisone, and the youngster took it for 3 years. Can anything be done for our daughter? The woman asked me. If only that dermatologist had told us that drug might do this to our daughter's reproductive system, we would have let her keep the rash. You understand? Yes. Do you see? This is just crazy. Now, a couple of years ago, I'm quoting from the book again, we're talking about 1974 now, the University of Chicago was slapped with a $77 million class action suit filed on behalf of more than 1,000 women who unwittingly took part in a university experiment some 25 years ago with the synthetic hormone DES. This suit has special significance to me since I was then at the university's School of Medicine and spent part of my time at Chicago Lyon Hospital. I knew of the experiment which tested the use of the DS in preventing threatened miscarriages. Being a conscientious medical student who trusted his school and believed his professors knew what they were doing, I didn't even question the experiment. Of course, neither I nor the 1,000 or so women should have trusted the school because the professors didn't know what they were doing. In 1971, Dr. Arthur L. Herbst, then of Harvard Medical School, first announced that an alarmingly high rate of daughters of women who had taken DES were developing vaginal cancer. Later on, we learned that male offspring of these women had an alarmingly high rate of genital malformations. And a statistically significant number of the women themselves were dying of cancer. Of course, by then, the bloom was off the rose as far as my unquestioning acceptance of medical science was concerned. I was not surprised when I heard the news. The damaging effects of hormones used in the pill and in sex hormones used for menopause had already surfaced. If it hadn't been obvious 25 years ago that DS would have a damaging effect on the developing vulnerable fetus, it was now. Did you get that? How many women have taken this drug and suffered the consequences of what I just mentioned here from this gentleman's book? You see. Now, let's see what time it is. It's, 8 o'clock. I usually sign off at 8, but this is so rewarding to share this information with you. I'm going to skip over. Okay. Let me quote this here for you. He says, to protect yourself from the pusher priest, you again have to make the heretic's radical leap of unfaith. Don't trust your doctor. Assume that if he prescribes a drug, it's dangerous. There is no safe drug. Eli Lilly himself once said that a drug without toxic effects is no drug at all. Every drug has to be approached with suspicion, unquote. Did you hear that, brothers and sisters? Eli Lilly, one of the biggest manufacturers of drugs, said that. Huh? That a drug without toxic effects is no drug at all. Think about this. And then, quote, he says, that goes double if you're pregnant. In fact, if you're pregnant, you and your baby are better off if you stay away from all drugs completely. A drug that has minor side effects or even no side effects on you may do irreparable harm to a developing fetus. Hundreds of drugs are marketed long before their effects on the fetus are known. Unless you want to donate your baby's welfare to science and be one of the first to find out a drug's effects, don't take any drug unless your life is at stake. Did you hear that? Unquote. Did you hear that? Any sisters out there pregnant? Heed. Whatever you put in your body affects the fetus. You know that. Why they tell you don't drink alcohol when you're pregnant or don't smoke when you're pregnant? It's the same with drugs, medical drugs. It affects the fetus. Oh, I got a headache. I need a Tylenol. You don't need a Tylenol. Go to sleep. Sleep it off. But there's ways to reverse that naturally. We're not getting into that right now. Now, Let's quote again from the book. He said, that includes aspirin. Though it's been around for 80 or more years, doctors still don't know how aspirin works because it's been a friend of the family for so long, people don't realize that aspirin is not without side effects and dangers of its own. Besides the most common side effect, stomach bleeding, aspirin can cause a hemorrhage under the scalp of a newborn if a mother takes it within 72 hours of delivery. Did you hear that? Let me repeat that. Besides the most common side effect, stomach bleeding, aspirin can cause a hemorrhage under the scalp of a newborn if a mother takes it within 72 hours of delivery. Then he says, I've often wondered why doctors often say take 2 tablets of 5 grains each despite the availability of a single 10-grain aspirin tablet. My God, are you paying attention, brothers and sisters? Now, quote again. Then he says, I'm skipping through this book. Then he says, the American Medical Association publishes a drug evaluation book, which in some cases gives even more information than the PDR. For one thing, the AMA, that's the American Medical Association, book has a list of cross-reference symptoms in the back. You look up your symptom, your side effect, and it will tell you which drugs are indicated or suspected. Unquote. We have to educate ourselves, brothers and sisters. We need these books in our library. We need the research. We need to pay attention. We can harm our children. You can harm a fetus, sister. You will harm yourself if you trust in these doctors of death. Do you understand? There's so much here. I mean, this book is packed. Again, let me give you the title of the book. This came out in 1976. Confessions of a Medical Heretic by Dr. Robert S. Mendelsohn, M.D. Okay? Now, I really don't want to hang up. There's so much here. Okay, I tell you what, I'll give you 10 more minutes. How's that, brothers and sisters? Okay, listen up. Ritual mutilations. This is chapter 3 in the book. Now, conservative estimates, such as that made by a congressional subcommittee, say that about 2.4 million operations performed every year are unnecessary, and that these operations cost $4 billion and 12,000 lives, or 5% of the 250,000 deaths following or during surgery each year. The Independent Health Research Group says the number of necessary operations is more than 3 million. Do you hear that? Unnecessary operations. You're going in there and they're butchering you, putting you under the knife for some unnecessary nonsense. Huh? Then, I quote again from the book, not only did they find that most of them needed no surgery, but fully half of them needed no medical treatment at all. Did you hear that? God Almighty, how wicked can they be? See, you trust in Western medicine. You all trust in Western medicine. Go for natural medicine. Be careful of these people. You understand? I know a lot of these doctors are ignorant of what they're doing. A lot of them are knowledgeable. You know? But it's just terrible. Now, Let me call it here. Okay. Once it became possible to drug the mother into a state of helpless oblivion, the obstetrician could become even more powerful. Since the mother couldn't assist in the delivery while unconscious, the forceps placed in the delivery room was assured. Sedated, feet in stirrups, shaven, attached to an intravenous fluid bag, and a battery of monitors, the woman in labor is set up so well for surgery, an operation had to be invented so the scene wouldn't go to waste. Enter the episiotomy. So routine is this surgical slicing of the perineum to widen the opening of the vagina that few women and even fewer doctors think twice about it. Doctors claim that the surgical incision is straighter and simpler to repair than the tear that is likely to occur when the baby's head and shoulders are born. They fail to acknowledge that if the woman is not drugged silly and if she's properly coached by someone who knows what's going on, and if she's prepared, then she will know how and when to push and not push to ease the baby out. When the birth is a conscious, deliberate experience, the perineal tear can usually be avoided. After all, the vagina was made to stretch and allow a baby to pass through. Even if tearing does occur, there's no evidence that the surgical incision heals better than a tear. Quite the contrary, my experience demonstrates that tears heal better and with less discomfort than episiotomies. There is some feeling that the episiotomy may lead to a later lessening of sexual pleasure. You hear that, sisters? What are they doing to you? You see? Something we got to be very careful. Now, let me close with this. Okay, I'm gonna try to cover this here. Last quote. It's going to be a long one. Okay. Fetal monitoring. Listening to the fetal heart, either through the mother's abdomen or most recently through electrodes screwed into the infant's scalp during labor, is the diagnostic sewing procedure that is reaping the harvest of cesarean section deliveries. Whether or not the fetus is really in trouble, if the monitor says something is wrong, there's a rush to slice the mother open and remove the baby. Then the obstetrician can bask in all the limelight that comes with performing a miracle. After all, he snatched a life from the jaws of certain death or disablement. Studies of compatible deliveries show that cesarean deliveries occur 3 to 4 times more often in births attended by electronic fetal monitoring than in those monitored with a stethoscope. That's not so hard to understand. If the mother doesn't want the operation, all the obstetrician has to do is point to the distressed blips on the monitor screen. That's reality. What appears on the cathode ray tube, not what the woman feels and wants. A woman has plenty of other reasons not to want her delivery electronically monitored. In order to attach electrodes to the fetus's scalp, the bag of waters must be artificially broken. This results in an instant depression of the fetal heart rate. In one study, children whose birth was electronically monitored were 65% more likely to suffer behavioral or developmental problems later in life. Do you hear that, sisters? What happened to midwifery, where a midwife comes to your home and delivers the baby natural without all these monitors and stuff? It's like they want to outlaw this. People before hospitals had their babies at home with no problem. Medicine has ruined everything, brothers and sisters. I'm telling you. Okay, I went past my time. I hope you all got something out of this. God willing, next week, I'm going to share some more from this book, Confessions of a Medical Heretic, by Dr. Robert S. Mendelson, M.D. And when I first read this book, I said, my God, do I ever want to go to a hospital again? Now, this is just me. And you know, I just thank God I've had excellent health most of my life. I believe the last time I saw a doctor was about 40-some years ago. I'm of the belief if it's not broken, don't fix it. I practice natural health. I eat everything organic. I work out every day. I don't drink. I don't smoke. I don't use drugs. I don't get hyped up and crazy. I don't get stressed out. I do deep breathing. I like to read. I like to take my walks. You understand? Work out every day. And I feel great. I thank God. I thank God. God has blessed me to live that life. I don't want to live no other life. So, the only way for me, I would have to see a doctor. Yes, if I was in a serious auto accident or some calamity, that's different. I do respect emergency medicine. It's great to have it to save lives in a medical emergency like that. That's great. I compliment them. But for disease, I wouldn't spend 2 cents with those doctors. I go natural, holistic. You see. So my brothers and sisters, I pray you all got something out of this talk this evening. I want you to share this information with your relatives, coworkers, neighbors, whomever, and tell them to tune in next week. Very important information. They need to know this stuff. Because I am going to quote again next week from this book. I want people to know. I love sharing information. But there's a lot we got to learn. And I'm learning something new every day. I'm learning more. And things I thought were right, some of that stuff I've come to find out is not all that right. And when I see it's not right, I make the change. And I share the information with you. It's a lot of things. But I will say this. The body is intelligent. The body knows how to heal itself. When you put the right foods, the right drinks in your body will heal. Again, I thank you all. God bless. God willing. We'll talk next week. Good night. Assalamu alaikum.